I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host, Dick Reichman, welcoming you to another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, literary snacks for the mind, and special guests and interviews. And today our special guest is Jane Anvik, one of the great ladies of Alaska, one of the great leaders of Alaska. And we're going to talk about an initiative that she's part of and part of our celebration of Women's Month, International and National Women's Month. And it is the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you so much, Sandy. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be able to talk about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. The best part is this is Women's History Month, and how we celebrate it here in Alaska is by celebrating the contributions that women have provided from one end of the state to the other. The Alaska Women's Hall of Fame is a virtual Hall of Fame, so you can go on the internet and type in www.AlaskaWomen'sHallOfFame, and bingo, there you see 104 women who have been nominated over the past 5 years to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. They are people who have contributed in some major way in their community, maybe in the state, maybe even nationally, but who have been a game changer in some way in their community in any kind of a professional field or civic endeavor. The best part is the listeners and you guys can nominate the women who have made a difference in your life, who you would like to honor as the women who have been really important in the development of Alaska.
Right off the bat, I want to know if Sarah Palin's on the list.
Yes, she is.
Okay.
But there have been so many extraordinary women in addition to Sarah Palin. And you go way back, women who may not still be with us, but whose achievements shine on.
Well, the good news is that you can have women who are living today. In order to be living today, they have to be at least 65 years of age, or women who have deceased, who have preceded us. So, for example, this year we inducted a woman who is a dentist. Her name was Leonie Van Zesch. Mm-hmm. She was a dentist in 1910 on dog sleds in Nome, and she provided dentistry to the entire northwest corner of the Arctic for many years at a time when women were not dentists, and they certainly weren't providing those services by dog team. We have other fabulous women such as Carolyn Jones, who lives here in Anchorage, who's been involved in Rotary for many years. Carolyn is the first woman in the United States of America who was elected to the Board of Governors of Rotary International. A woman from Anchorage, Alaska, was the first woman to serve on the National Governing Board of Rotary International. We have women who have been able to serve in education, such as Carolyn Cuomo, but we also have women who have served in aviation. The first Alaska Native aviator this year was inducted. Her name is Ellen Paniak. She's the first aviator who was a commercial pilot from Nome, Alaska. So we have people who have done a variety of work in every corner of the state. This year, we also honored Rosita Wuerl, who is an anthropologist from Southeast Alaska, who is one of the culture keepers of the Tlingit and Haida people of Southeast Alaska, as well as Hannah Solomon. She died this past year at the age of 102 and was the most exquisite beater in the entire interior. Her great-great-granddaughter received her award on behalf of Hannah Solomon, an Athabascan elder bearer of many years.
Oh, that's so exciting. It must be so rewarding when people send in these nominations and you get to learn in depth about all these amazing women.
Everyone has the opportunity to think of the women who made an influence in your life, in your profession. You know, who are the women who have made a difference in dramatics in our country?
We actually did a play during the celebration of statehood about Lena Mora Lewis, and she was inducted that year.
And was also inducted into the International Women's Hall of Fame. You can go on the Hall of Fame website, and you can see their pictures, and you can read their biographies, and get a sense of what their contributions had been throughout the state.
You know, part of this, I think, is mentorship, to inspire young women who are coming up today that what is possible. Was that part of the initiative for the Women's Hall of Fame, or what was the initiative when you guys were cooking it up?
It was intended to say, at the time, in 2008, Alaska was celebrating the 50th anniversary of statehood. And there were many activities going on. And a group of women who are from lots of different organizations, from Zonta organization, from the Alaska Women's Political Action, from the Alaska Women's Network, from the YWCA, from the university, from the Athena Society of the Chamber of Commerce, mm-hmm. came together and said, how do we make sure that the voice of women and the contributions of women are included as we celebrate statehood? While there were 55 people who participated in the Constitutional Convention, 6 of them were women. So we started building the community of people who had been breaking trail for the rest of us from that original effort to try to include the voice of women in the celebration of statehood. So we came together, found 50 women who had served from the beginning of time in many varieties of roles, and then invited the rest of the communities to be able to nominate people in subsequent years. So we have people from Northwest Alaska, people from the interior, people from Southeast Alaska, in journalism, in theater, in education, we have some scientists who have made significant contributions. So we have people who have worked in a variety of roles. And I'll bet there are people listening today who can say, you know, that person really changed my life in fill in the blanks, in biophysics, or that woman really changed my life in how she taught crippled children how to work with new equipment. Or that woman really changed my life in the way in which she did open heart surgery on me. I'm just saying that women have the opportunity to be able to be celebrated in a wide variety of ways.
Absolutely. And of course, the truth is, as we know, women of a certain age, my age, that the opportunities for women, because always been these extraordinary women who beat the odds and were contributors no matter what. But now, many women are able to achieve and see opportunities and potentials of what they can do. And that is different now.
We have lots of opportunity, but we also have to make sure that the young people who follow us know that those women are as important in the building of our communities as are many of the men. Typically, our community leaders have most often been male, and it is just important to be able to know that the role of women is also important in the roles of shaping our government. Arla Sturgiluski and Fran Ulmer and mm-hmm. Katie Hurley have been inducted into the Hall of Fame for their contribution to public life. Susan Butcher was in the Hall of Fame for her contribution to athletics, women who have been engaged in other kinds of athletic endeavors as well. So we have a wide variety, and we welcome contributions from anyone. The nominations are open right now for 2013. They will close in October. So if you are interested in nominating someone who has made a big difference in your life, you can go online, and the nomination form is right there. It's an electronic form, so you have to be able to type it on the computer. And people who had previously been inducted into the Hall of Fame serve as the judges. And so next March, we'll be celebrating the new class of 2013.
What are some of the questions on the nomination form? And then what's the next step after you get them?
The nomination form say, you know, for what is your nominee known for? What were her accomplishments? What was her background? Has she received other awards? How did she mentor other women in her activities associated with that? So, for example, Ellen Paniak, who was the first woman who was an aviator, a commercial aviator, also spent the better part of the second half of her life telling and educating women that they too could be commercial pilots all over the state of Alaska, and even Inupiat women, because there were not very many Alaska Native aviators at the time. So how did they help? How did they extend a hand to the young women who came behind them in terms of being able to facilitate their interest and their development?
Yeah, passing the torch on an encouragement and inspiration is a very important part of all this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know that I nominated someone who was inducted, Leo Morgan.
Morgan is a wonderful, wonderful writer who had started her career as a journalist with the Tundra Times and had worked.
And she wrote the biography on Howard Rock, and I guess she was the first woman who went to almost all 220 villages and wrote about them for Alaska Magazine.
During the development of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
And yes, and so she's instrumental in spreading the word about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jane Anvik is our guest, and we're talking about women. Do you feel, Jane, that Alaska is behind the world? And it seems the political world, at least, is more and more accepting women. We have a senator. We've had from this state. We've had two secretaries of state who were women. The chancellor of Germany is a woman, major power. Do you feel that the world is making progress in recognizing women in the top rungs of power and importance? And do you feel that Alaska is keeping up with the rest of the world?
I think that the world is changing in regard to that, and I do think that Alaska has two advantages. One is that in Alaska, with a small population and a challenging environment, women have been partners with men since the beginning in many, many respects. And so it took all hands on deck to be able to be successful in Alaska. We are a little bit behind in electoral office. I was just in Juneau this last week, and they had a luncheon as part of Women's History Month, mm-hmm. where they honored all the women who had ever served in the Alaska State Legislature. Senator Betty Davis conducted this as part of the Women's Caucus. And what we have was about 112 women who have served in the Alaska State Legislature since territorial days through statehood. Out of 700 people who have served in the Alaska State Legislature.
How does that statistic figure with other states?
We're a little behind. Uh-huh. And we have two things going for us. One is that the very first law that was passed by the first territorial legislature was the capacity of women to vote.
And that was before 1920.
And that was before the national government gave women the right to vote. So the territorial government was ahead of the national government in enfranchising women's vote. We have about 20% of our legislators have been women, and there are other states that have as many as 40 and 50% of the of their elected officials have been women. There are also nation states, countries, who have in their constitution that 50% of the population is female and 50% of the representation needs to be female. And so there are many Scandinavian countries for whom that is the norm.
So that's like a quota system.
Yes, it is.
Ah.
It has a reflection of what is the population. The population is equally divided between men and women, and can we create representation that is also a reflection of that. But we also have women who have been engaged in a variety of roles. Women have been the chancellors of the university. Women have been the CEOs of many businesses in Alaska. And I think that women are embraced as potential partners and allies in all forms of business interests, community interests. So I think that the feeling of what women can accomplish is generally acknowledged in Alaska.
I understand that the salaries that women are paid to do similar jobs are less than the salaries a man would be paid doing the same job.
That is correct. Today, in the United States of America, women get paid 70 cents for every $1 that the same task would be compensated for by a man. And that is the truth. The law of the land says you have to have equal pay, that has not been the practice. Another thing that's happening this year is that in the Alaska State Legislature, there's an effort to reinstitute the Alaska Women's Commission, which is an effort to create data on how are women faring socially and economically in Alaska. And when we had the Women's Commission previously, it was the Women's Commission who noticed that Alaska was off the charts on domestic violence and sexual assault, and actually was the basis upon which those laws were changed to be able to provide additional resources and a change in law. It used to be it was okay, or it was not illegal, for men to beat their wives. And now it is. And that is a direct result of the creation of the Alaska Women's Commission saying, this has got to change.
It used to be legal?
Yes.
It was legal, really? You couldn't file an assault against your husband who beat you up?
It was just something that went on in the quiet of your home. But today, a woman has the legal right to call a police officer and say, stop this.
And I didn't realize that she never did.
Yes, amazing.
That's interesting about the Women's Commission. Now, when was it originally there, and then why did it go away?
It was established, I believe, in the late 70s, early 80s. And when a new governor came in, he wanted to convert it to a family council as opposed to a women's commission. And it focused on homemakers. And then it sort of atrophied into non-existence and wasn't funded. So it is an effort to reinvigorate the Alaska Women's Commission in an effort to particularly keep data on the conditions of women in our communities. So we have some real information about it. When Arla Sturgiluski, the former state senator, was trying to prepare remarks about the Women's Commission, she found it very challenging to find places where people were collecting data about income, about education levels, about work experiences of women in the state, because all the information was dissipated into lots of different places. So she was really the poster child of saying, the reason we need the Women's Commission is so we've got a single source of that information for us to be able to evaluate our public policy.
Well, I'm glad it's how the rebirth then is reactivated. And it sounds like maybe in the Women's Hall of Fame is sort of a direct child of that movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are reflective of both the women who came before us in the establishment of the Women's Commission, in the founding of it, and in building up our communities and our opportunities.
Yes, we all are on the shoulders of many remarkable women and people. And, you know, I'm wondering about yourself, Jane. You have certainly lived a life of contribution to the community and to the state. And I noticed that you actually went to Harvard. What inspired you? Did you have a fabulous parents or heroines or what was it?
Both my parents believe that their daughters could do anything they wanted. And they said that regularly and often. And I think that we were advised to do well in school and advised to be competitive in athletics. Mm-hmm. And I also had the privilege to be involved in high school debate, which turns out to have been a really valuable asset in being able to articulate a point of view. And so I'd say we started with my family, my educators, and then I think the best opportunities were I came to Alaska when I was 25, and people said you can have this job or you could create this new one. And very often, the opportunity to create new pathways for achieving things was a result. I worked as a city planner and got the opportunity to work on the development of a comprehensive plan for Anchorage in 1973. And
is that how you met Vic, your husband, Vic Fisher?
I did meet Vic as a result of he also is a background in city and regional planning. Uh-huh. So we did meet through commonality of interests in community planning. And then I had the opportunity to work in rural Alaska with the Alaska Federation of Natives and worked on planning water and sewer and housing projects in villages across the state, but above all had the privilege of meeting the cultures of Alaska's native people and drinking a lot of tea in a lot of kitchens with spectacular people who were willing to share their points of view and their views of the world with me. So I had a combination of working with the government and then working with rural communities. I had the privilege of working with Governor Jay Hammond and managed a program called the Alaska Public Forum, where we went across the state holding town hall meetings on the subject of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline is being constructed. Soon it will be finished, and the state of Alaska, which was broke at the time, will start having money. And the question was, what should we do with the money? Do you think we should save it? Should we save a piece of it? Should we create a permanent fund? So one of my experiences was to travel across the state with the governor to be able to say, should we save some of the money? Should we create a permanent fund for future generations of Alaskans? So I kept being in the right place at the right time with great opportunities.
And to particularly work with Jay Hammond must have been so exciting.
Terrific. I also had the privilege of working with Governor Steve Cooper in the Department of Commerce as the Commissioner of Commerce and with Governor Tony Knowles in the Department of Natural Resources. I also served with Tony when I served in local government here in Anchorage on the Anchorage Assembly for 6 years, and Tony was the mayor, so we got along great.
That's great. Well, you know, we come from a time where, you know, you couldn't get into medical school, or there were quotas for getting to medical school if you were a woman, or even into doctorate programs, and now that's so almost reversed. Women are the majority.
I think women are at least 50% mm-hmm. of most medical schools and most law schools today. And when, like Esther Wanicky, who was a member of the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. went to law school in the late 40s, early 50s, and she was one of two women in her law school class and in Washington, D.C. And she said, in order to be able to succeed in law school, she volunteered to be head of the law review so she could write the law review so that it would reflect her point of view instead of those guys.
Infiltration.
She was at
good strategy.
She was at the George Washington University Law School, and there were two women in her class.
Yes. And is Esther still practicing law?
No, Esther is retired. She served as the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources under Bill Sheffield, and she served as the director of the Minerals Management Service for the United States of America, all the offshore oil and gas for Alaska in the 70s, and before that served as the director of what was called the State Federal Land Use Planning Commission, which was the predecessor for the development of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. They did the evaluation of what are the variables that are going to affect this. So Esther's contribution to Alaska spans 40 years, and she is now enjoying her retirement and is possibly listening to this story today.
Brava, Esther, if you are. We hope you are. Well, why do you think we can encourage more people, women, to go to take office, to have their place at the table with more power to determine policy?
Well, I think it starts actually with how we educate our children, how we mm-hmm. educate our daughters and our sons, and the notion of how we are instructing our children about what community service looks like and how we do it. I believe that women bring tremendous assets to the conversation about public policy having to do with cooperation. This goes back to psychology of men and women, and that one of those how do we work together kinds of tactics is one of the aspects that women contribute to a dialogue about the development of public policy. So my advice is we work with leadership training programs such as the Girl Scouts. I serve on the board of the Girl Scouts because I does teach girls how to develop leadership skills the Girl Scouts.
And also a sense of collaboration within the troop and that kind of thing.
Collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Well, your implication here is that women are by nature more cooperative than men. Is this cultural or is this natural or what's the source of that?
Well, the literature on that subject has to do with going back to male and female roles and that the gathering of food and the protection of children did require, it takes a village to make those roles be successful, whereas hunting and gathering could be kind of more solitary activities. And the psychological research on all of that argues.
That's built into the sexes. This difference is built into the sexes.
Yes, that the sense of collaboration is required for those traditional roles. And even though today we are probably not in those roles as acutely as we had been 1,000 years ago.
It's more evolving into partnerships, relationships.
The collaboration aspect of women on how they approach issues is demonstrated in a variety of roles, public service as well as corporate service.
But it's having influence on the way corporations are run, where marriages are fulfilled. It's both voices having equal value in partnership.
And that's not to say that women are not competitive, that women are not perfectly able of being lone wolves who act arbitrarily and capriciously. It is, however, to say that when we have a public conversation, it is really good to have all those skills on the table at the same time, and that to only have 20% of the participants be female means that we are not using all the assets that might be available to our communities in solving complicated problems.
And, right, and in addition to that of parenting, don't you think, Jane, the way we raise our sons makes a difference too?
I think how we raise our children is imperative about what kind of a society we're going to have in the future. Absolutely.
So.
Well, we're quite near the end of our time here, Jane. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about this website and organization so that people can leave here with a handle that they can move on?
I want to encourage all our listeners to think of the women who they applaud in their lives and go nominate them at the website, which is called Alaska Women's, plural, hallofame.org. And the nomination form is right there on the site. Anyone is available. It can nominate any woman. If she's living, she has to be over 65. If she's deceased, that's fine.
Well, how did Sarah Palin get on the list if she's still living?
The first year we didn't have that rule.
Oh. She's grandfathered in?
She got grandfathered in.
Grandmothered in.
Wow.
But while you're at that site, be sure to look at the archives and the lives and stories of all these fantastic women who have contributed to Alaska.
And I just want you to know that on the Girl Scout issue, this is the last week to be able to buy Girl Scout cookies. And Girl Scout cookies is teaching girls financial self-sufficiency. It's the financial literacy program of the Girl Scouts where they actually have to calculate their costs, and they earn money to go to camp. They earn
and
money
it's the 100th
to engage.
Year this year.
And this is the 100th anniversary of Girl
Scouts.
It's
also contributing to the overweight population.
You can give the cookies away.
Obesity.
Obesity
of somebody.
Anyway. Cookies and donuts, right, Dick?
Girl Scouts builds girls of character, courage, and challenges who change the world. So Girl Scouts are one of the tracks that we use for
buy those
new
cookies.
Leaders. You bet.
And thank you, Jane, so much for being here and sharing more about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame and about yourself as well.
My pleasure.
And join us again next week for another chapter of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler.